Hey, everybody, it's Wayne here. And many of you know we're going to rebrand the podcast again because of the unexpected but really pretty amazing verdict in Utah that has left me, much to my surprise, maybe yours too, not in prison. You'll hear more about that in the next week, but one of the things we're doing in addition to rebranding is trying to record hangout conversations. And what a hangout conversation is on Friday nights, I've been organizing these little community events where a bunch of folks gather and talk about something that matters to us. And they're often really good conversations. So I thought, why don't we record these and put them out on the podcast? And these are going to be much shorter conversations, a little more spontaneous, probably a little more background noise. Hopefully no one minds. But we're trying it out and seeing what you all think of them, because I think they're pretty fun, and I hope you will too. So the first of these hangout conversations is with me, Dean, and Priya, and a bunch of other people who are hanging out with us in San Francisco. But the subject matter is participatory content. And that might sound like a boring concept, but I actually think it's pretty crucial to changing the world, because one of the things that's been missing and almost everything we're seeing out there on the web and newspapers and TV, Netflix, is a sense that you are part of something. I think the world is dominated by the celebrity / influencer mindset, and that's a huge problem for those of us who want change. And you'll hear a little bit more about why I think that's the case and why we think that's the case in this conversation. So without further ado, here is our first hangout conversation.
All right, so we're doing something completely new, everybody, and we're recording these and putting them on the podcast. So I just want to let everyone know, in case you don't want to say something that's recorded. Mostly these mics will pick up what the three of us say, but you know, we definitely encourage all of you to participate, because this will go out to 40,000 people on the newly rebranded podcast for the second time in last month. We're rebranding again. We're going to call it The Simple Art. But today's conversation is about the subject on the slide. The most important influencer is you. And among other things, we'll be talking about some social networks research, our experiences as activists and organizers of the last 15 years with what we call participatory content, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's content that we create, whether it's video, podcasts, blogs, that everybody participates in. So, but without further ado, I thought I'd start by showing a video. This is actually one of my favorite videos that DXC's edited over the last 5 or so years. It didn't actually get that many views, given the amount of time we spent on it. But for those of you listening on the podcast, we'll put this in the show notes. It's the end of year 2019 video, but it's an example of what I mean.
Video.
You like this one? Make sure you're talking on the mic, remember. Okay. But it's an example of what we call participatory content. Folks should move in. This is a cool video. I like this video a lot. So there it is. Can someone hit the lights real quick? So what are your thoughts, Priya? We kind of made it happen.
Yeah. Yeah, that was emotional.
Yeah. Yeah, you're crying. Tell us why.
Well, honestly, I just missed those days when, like, all of us were together. So, sorry, it's a little personal for me. But also, just looking back at all the amazing things we did together.
Yeah.
And just seeing, like, all the animals being rescued and... And Meihua, the last scene of me holding Meihua, that's the first DXC Open Rescue animal, and I'll never forget her and all the things she taught me, and especially just looking at her going outside for the first time. I mean, it was, you know, watching animals experience their first moments outside, but also watching us experience watching them was incredible. Like, I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah.
You know, like, just animals inside of factory farms and then looking up at the sky. I mean, the contrast is so, and just thinking like, we did that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was beautiful, sad, and just all the emotions. I love that video.
Yeah. Do you know what my favorite part of that video is?
It's
probably surprising to most people.
I think I do, but I
don't want to
forget.
Guess?
Let me think. I think I know this. Oh.
Any guesses, Dean? What do you think my favorite part is?
I have no idea.
I've watched this video probably 1,000 times because I was the primary editor on this video. And I think most people are surprised by what my favorite part is.
courtroom to
so
the front office.
Yeah.
Because our future
it's right
depends
here.
On what we do today.
So our future depends on what we do today. And I think the key word you're using is we. And the key word in that line is also we. That all this stuff that happened was because this was a participatory network. And this is kind of one of your first direct actions, right? I mean,
yeah,
you had
my second time getting arrested.
Second time getting arrested. Yeah. You got arrested for the first time in...
That was 2018 in McCoy.
McCoy, yeah. And this is the second at Reichert. But there's a pretty intense scene of you holding a duck that was taken from one of the dumpsters.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, tell us about that experience.
Yeah, that was a really transformational moment. You know, I've been thinking a lot of how that contrasts with my first experience.
Huh.
I think this second one at the Reichert Duck Farm was kind of almost a breaking point for me.
Wow.
Where I kind of just said to the world, like, these animals, they have value, they count. And all of the social systems preventing us from talking compassionately about them, just burn it down. I think that was kind of my attitude. Mm. I was just finishing up my degree in college. And the first time I had gotten arrested, I had this attitude of really seeking, I guess, harmony with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted my direct action and civil disobedience to be something that strengthened my ability to communicate powerfully with people I knew.
Yeah.
And I remember posting on Facebook saying, you're seeing pictures of cruelty. You're seeing this industrial chicken farm right now. What are questions you have? And some of those questions I propose to you are, can we have a system that regulates a system of animals and can also be kind to them?
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of having this questioning, almost Socratic approach in my communications. But when I was at this duck farm, seeing these ducks in a dumpster, I just kind of started screaming at the world. I thought, this is human supremacy. This is violence. And this is speciesism. And this is just a system of incredible cruelty that we need to stop now. And the right side of history is to join this right now. And honestly, in a way, I kind of miss that first approach I had,
mm-hmm.
because I kind of lost a lot of my patience with the world after this action.
Well, it's kind of like King said in the letter from a Birmingham jail, sometimes patience is not a good thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes urgency is what's needed. I do want to say, for all the FBI agents in the room who are listening to this podcast, we don't actually burn anything down, right?
It's a metaphor.
I'm personally not supportive of that. It's a metaphorical comment, I think, I hope. And if you are listening, do not execute a search warrant against us. Or maybe you should. In light of what happened in Utah, go ahead and execute it. We're going to win anyways. No,
we can do it.
But, yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of powerful things about this video. Certainly, like, the opportunity we had to rescue animals was incredibly powerful. The upfront confrontation you have with just how sick this world is when it comes to vulnerable beings. And I don't mean just animals, other vulnerable beings. I mean, Alan and I were talking about global poverty. My cousin's very motivated by suffering in the developing world. And if you go to places like Bangladesh, even right now, I mean, Bangladesh is drowning, literally, because of climate change. And you have little kids whose land is literally flooded. They have no more homes. We're in San Francisco, we're literally outside on the street. You got people living in filth and on concrete because they don't have homes. So it is pretty grim when you confront just how much suffering there is in the world. But to me, one of the most important things about this video and what we're trying to do with this new project, which we're rebranding again to The Simple Heart, is get everybody involved. Because that was one of the really important mantras from day one that we talked about, that what we did with Direct Action Over a Prairie was a lot of things. It was open rescue, it was until every animal's free, speaking truth to power. One of the biggest things we did was we had this mantra that we're here to make every one of you the best damn activist in person you can be. You know, we want you to feel powerful. And I think that's something we want to do, not just for animal rights activists, but for everybody. And the way to do that is to make sure everybody's plugged in. So this is a little chart that I pulled from Damon Centola, who's a mathematical sociologist at the University of Pennsylvania. He wrote this really great book called Change, How to Make Big Things Happen. And the most important and central insight of this book, and for those of you listening on the podcast, we'll put this graphic in the podcast notes so you can look at the image, is two different models of organizing. You know these models, right, Dino?
I love these.
So what's the left side?
That's, what do you call it? Maybe like a firework model of social relationships?
I forget what he calls it, but I call it the hub and spoke.
Hub and spoke.
Yeah. And then the right?
It's a bad word.
It's a bad word, but we'll say it anyways. Yeah.
Fishnet.
It's a fishnet.
It's a fishnet.
Yeah, but actually, does anyone have any guesses? So what Damon Suntoll studies is what he calls complex contagion. And complex contagion is different from simple contagion. He doesn't mean literally a pathogen like COVID-19. He's talking about social contagion, the spread of political and social ideas and behaviors, things like animal liberation or Black Lives Matter or gay rights. And simple contagion is basically something that spreads very easily. It's not very costly for to jump from one person or one group to the next. Complex contagion is something that requires some sacrifice, some cost, whether it's a social cost, being vegan, being a little different, a behavioral cost, having to go find vegan food in a world that is not very amenable to vegans, or maybe even political costs, like going to prison because of your beliefs. So, and what Damon argues is that for simple contagion, the left-hand side can work very effectively, where you have one person who's very connected to a lot of people. But for complex contagion, when you're asking people to make changes, it actually costs something. This right-hand side network is what you have to build and what you have to find.
But doesn't he also challenge the idea that the spokes model functions? Because doesn't he take on Oprah and say...
Yeah, no. So in a complex contagion model, you don't want the hub and spoke because, and there are basically two reasons. And then I want to ask Priya about how we actually saw this unfold over the last 10 years of our organizing. But the reason the left-hand side model doesn't work is because one thing you'll notice about a lot of the people in the left-hand side model is a lot of them are just connected to one person, the hub in the system, right? You've got, so for example, this person, you're only connected to the person in the center, this person, only connected to one person. And what you find when you're talking about complex contagion, you need a lot of redundancy in your efforts to change. It can't just be one person coming to you and saying, hey, why don't you go vegan? It's got to be 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people in your social network. And there's actually a rule where when about 25% of the people who are connected to you are endorsing some change, that change often hits a tipping point and everybody just flips, right? So, but if you're not connected to that many people, you know, you're not getting enough application. You're not getting the redundancy you need, the multiple messaging that you need to actually be convinced of a change. But the other reason the left-hand side model doesn't work very well is it turns out that to make change in the left-hand side model, you basically have to go to the hub, right? Because the person in the center is connected to everybody. And this is kind of the traditional influencer model. It's like Earthling Ed, Joaquin Phoenix, Cory Booker. There's this one person we all look to and we're all connected to them on social media. We kind of hope they'll change and therefore change the world. And the problem with that model is all these connections the hub is connected to don't just give the hub an opportunity to connect with a lot of people. They also hold the hub back, right? So the classic example, this is Oprah Winfrey, where you might think Oprah Winfrey is incredibly influential. In many ways, she is. Like, she's got a book club that has millions of people. She's got a show that many more millions more watch. But Oprah is held captive by her audience. Yeah. If she tries to move too far ahead of her audience actually drags her back. And you see this even with people like Donald Trump. As much as we might think that Donald Trump is this singular evil who does all these awful things, it's pretty interesting. When you see Donald Trump deviate from his audience, he gets pulled back. The best example of this is there was a speech Trump gave, I think a few months ago, where he was talking about how wonderful vaccines were, which his audience is not down with that message. And they all start booing and hissing. And he quickly pulls back and says, oh, wait, actually, take it back. I didn't mean anything. Don't get the vaccine. You know, and I think the same is true of most big influencers. They're pretty much trapped by their audience. And the more people you're connected to, the more you're kind of dragged back in almost this inertial way. It's like you've got a parachute behind you that's holding you back. While people who are less connected, they have more of an opportunity to actually be independent. Because if you're on the right-hand side, right, and you're only connected to four people, well, even if all four of those people tell you don't go vegan, that's only four people. As opposed to in this model, where the one person who really matters in this model, the one person who's connected everyone, you know, they've got 90, 50, 100, 1,000 people connected to them, all telling them if they go vegan or they endorse animal rights, you're being weird, you're being different, pull back, please stop. So those are kind of the two reasons, redundancy and what he calls countervailing influence, namely the inertial drag of the hub and spoke model on anyone trying to create change. Did I explain that clearly? Kind of a mathematical point. But I think we kind of saw this in DXC in the early stages because unlike pretty much everyone else out there in animal rights, when we started this in 2012, we expressly said, we actually don't care that much about celebrities and influential people and all these institutional power holders in the animal rights movement. What we care about is people in the grassroots. Like, we care about ordinary people who might not have a Twitter following of 100,000, might not make Facebook videos that have a million views every time you post them, but they are connected to their local communities and they can have influence on their local networks. Am I right?
Yeah. No, definitely. I was just thinking that I think one of the ways we did that is just by offering people a space to gather and, well, also like living together in activist housing and, you know, quickly just having a community where everyone's kind of has these other people who are in many ways depending on them, doing things together, like everything from rescuing animals to going to, you know, Saturday morning meetups and protesting and doing disruptions. And all of a sudden, you know, people literally go from like, oh yeah, I'm not vegan yet, to like holding a sign and then doing open rescue. And then it kind of shows you what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Goes back to the name of the presentation, which is that the most important influencer is you.
Yeah. Yeah. Back in those days, I mean, all these people would post videos on Facebook or on YouTube, and these were not expert video editors. They didn't know what they were doing, but we really encouraged it and we supported it. And we said, this is amazing, you know? And
yeah, like people from different chapters,
And then we compile them into these videos that were worldwide edited, that made people feel like they're part of something bigger than just their local chapter. So it was a combination of really great, I think, local organizing by people across the nation who really wanted to connect with other people, cared about animals, cared about making the world a better place, but also a coordinated network that was still connected to everyone else, you know? So that's kind of what I think we need to recreate. And one of the key things about this model is that, again, it's not just that we're all connected to some center, whether it's me or Priya or Almira, it's that people are connected to each other, right? And that's kind of the long-term goal in a good movement that, you know, I mean, even Belinda organizing this dance party tonight, this is awesome. That's like good organizing. Kathy coming and helping out, making food, this is good organizing. She's meeting other people, connecting. You know, Shiloh and Dean reaching out to Sam today and asking Sam to come out, that's good organizing because they're forming connections with each other. And I think that's the long-term goal of not just an effective movement, but an effective society. Because one of the things that's fallen apart in our society today is everybody sitting at home watching TikTok and Netflix. We're all wondering what's happening with Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen. Does anyone follow that story?
No, what's going on? She's an ex-Victoria's Secret model.
Yeah, she is a model, and Tom Brady is, I think, the world's most famous football player, probably. So apparently today, the world announced, or they announced, they're getting divorced. And it was like front page news.
No way.
Everywhere.
No.
And Chris is like, oh, no. So this is exactly what we need to not do. We need to care more about, you know, our no, I'm just kidding. I'm going. I don't think he's super religious. I think he's super Trumpian. He's like a right-wing guy, but he's not super religious from what I know. So, yeah, I mean, I think we've got to find a way for people to care more about what's happening in their local networks and their friends and family members than what's happening on TikTok.
Yeah, and I like that idea of care, because I think a lot of times in the animal rights movement, I've gotten frustrated looking at people around me and thinking, why don't people care about this thing? And what looking at this social network model reminds me is that care isn't just something that we hold in ourselves. It's something that we take cues from the people around us. Yeah. What we care about and what we allow ourselves to care about is often what we see opportunity to actually make impact on in the world around us. Like, I personally think that insects are probably sentient beings who feel pain and suffer. Frankly, if there were like a really strong movement right now talking about insect sentience, I would probably be out there saying, yes, like, insects are sentient beings. We should stop hurting them and really think about...
That's our movement, dude.
Yeah, it's our movement. So, yeah.
That's called the animal rights movement.
Right, but there's a reason we're calling ourselves the animal rights movement and not the insect movement, and there's a reason we don't lead with the
insects, animals,
right?
My friend. No, I'm just kidding.
Sure, right?
Yeah, but we don't talk about insects that
but
often.
But the broader point, right? Yeah. What we allow ourselves to care about is often what we see space to care about around us. And when I feel impatience with people around me, I have to remind myself, maybe they just don't feel like their social spheres around them will support them sticking their neck out to care about this thing.
Yeah,
but I think one powerful thing about the video that you showed us with direct action is how when you act as a beacon, like a really strong beacon yourself, it can help the people around you. And I think my mom is a really beautiful example of this. The first time I got arrested for animals, I posted on Facebook and stuff, and people were saying, that's really amazing, congratulations. But then I went to my mom, and my mom knew I was vegan vegetarian for maybe 15 years at this point, and she was like, okay, that's cool, that's his thing, right? But then after I got arrested, first she freaked out. She said, what are you doing? You're supposed to go to law school. What are you doing? But then she looked into it more, and she told me, Dean, you know, I've decided to go vegan. And I asked why.
Yeah, your mom died.
And she said, you know, if our kid is out there putting his freedom on the line, I cannot in good conscience continue to eat animals.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of personal connection, like my mom like works at a consulate, a diplomatic place for Canada. She works at the Canadian consulate, and she's surrounded by a lot of people who are not only like concerned about their work together, but they're literally representing an entire nation of Canada, Canada. Sorry. And that's a lot of scrutiny to be under, and for my mom to be a lot of scrutiny under. So for her to stick her neck out and say, look, like, I love my kid and I love what he's talking about, like, that really inspired me and showed me the power of us being storytellers to the people around us.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a very important Harvard study that we used to cite a lot, and I haven't cited it recently, and which is surprising because you all know I love citing studies. But
shame.
I know. Great shame. But there's a Harvard study of the Tea Party, right? You all know the Tea Party, this weird movement. I shouldn't say weird. That's a little mean. But it is kind of weird. Come on. It's a weird movement. Weird movement of people who, yeah, this conservative movement that was saying we need to have a new Tea Party when they were basically, you know, I don't even remember what the exact issue was. I think it was Obama was basically trying to support people who had lost their homes. And all these people were saying, I don't want to pay for someone else's mortgage. You know, back in 2008 when we were having financial crisis, they're upset about Obama. And it became this weird racist thing that Trump basically took advantage of. But it's become one of the most powerful forces in American politics, which is why we have the repeal of Roe versus Wade, why Donald Trump won in 2016, and so on. But these Harvard economists studied the Tea Party, and we're trying to understand, how were they so effective? How did they transform the Republican Party and seize so much power in a nation where a lot of people don't actually support their agenda? Like most Americans, sorry, Kristen and Anna, but most Americans are pro-choice. It's just the reality. And yet we don't have the right to an abortion anymore. Most Americans are against guns. We don't have gun control. And the Tea Party is one of the reasons. And what these scholars found is the Tea Party has done enormous amount of direct action and protesting. They do really disruptive activism. And if you go to like town halls and places where the Tea Party is powerful, they're doing like wilder stuff than DXE does. Like,
oh no.
Throwing stuff and screaming, getting in fights. I mean, like the wildest stuff. But what these scholars found is these protests, these disruptions themselves, had basically no impact directly. What they did was they empowered people on the grassroots to speak more boldly in their own local communities. So someone would go out to a Tea Party rally and like throw a pie at AOC or something like that. And then they'd go home to like their buddies and say like, man, I just threw a pie at AOC. That was amazing. We got to get down for the Tea Party, boys.
Don't
and everyone's like,
ideas,
yeah,
then.
Let's get down for the Tea Party. That was entirely the way it worked. And I don't think that was the way Dean and your mom interacted.
I think Wayne's making that
up.
I'm
not sure. My mom,
I suspect you didn't go home and say, like, I threw a pie at Donald Trump. Let's
Wayne,
go,
Kristen's
mama.
Wondering if that actually happened.
What's that?
The pie.
No, I don't think it actually happened.
I don't think so.
I don't think anyone threw a pie at AOC.
Don't get any ideas now.
That was the kind of thing. But that was the kind of thing the Tea Party did. I mean, they did weird stuff. Like, they were getting dressed up in, like, these colonial outfits and, like, throwing stuff at people, screaming, doing all sorts of weird stuff. And
did they actually throw things at people?
I'm pretty sure they did.
Really? Did they hit?
I'm sure they did. Wow. I mean, like, the Tea Party, I'm pretty sure, has gotten, like, into fist fights with people. And they,
wow.
Like, I mean, it was mostly a nonviolent movement, which is why it was more effective than it otherwise would have been. It's not like there's been a bombing. You have to go back to, like, Timothy McVeigh to see a bombing by the alt-right. But the Harvard study basically shows that the primary role of direct action was just mobilizing people to have conversations in their own communities. You had all these quiet people who were, like, quietly conservative and thinking, I could talk about this, but people are going to think I'm racist. And now they're like proud. They're like, yeah, I'm racist. It's great, you know? And the Tea Party just empowered these people who previously were not willing to speak because they're afraid. And 100%, I just think about like the first time you walked into my apartment in 2013, February, and like we said, who wants to give a speak out? And here's Priya Sahani, this woman I've just met, who thinks like the article I wrote about veganism is completely absurd, but she's like, yeah, I'm down.
And you did. And you did a great job of that speak out.
Yeah. I was like, wow, this guy is crazy.
And I am. Little did you know, I actually am.
Yeah. No, that was... Well, the reason I decided to come back is because I know I've told the story before and I've mentioned it on your podcast is because you said, I think we can make animal liberation happen.
Yeah, that's true.
In our lifetime. And I was like, okay, I don't care what we're doing. I'm doing this. Let's do it.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that binds people together, because when you don't have like a more hierarchical hub and spoke model, the thing that keeps people all bound together without the strict hierarchy of the hub and spoke is the shared vision. Like that is kind of our hierarchy. It's a symbolic political hierarchy. It's a thing that like tells us all what is our goal, right? And for us, when we all came together, and I think this is true of the new project too, maybe not in as explicit terms and not in an activist-y way, is the idea that every living being on this earth deserves to be safe, happy, and free. All right, we're just about done, but did anyone have any thoughts or questions they want to add? What did you like about that video, if anything? Have y'all seen that video before? What do you think, Kathy? Do you like it? You can tell me the truth.
Do you like it? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, shit. What was Kathy the first? Go ahead. What was your first action?
ALC 2018.
Yeah. Nice.
Well, I was thinking of the Whole Foods action, which was part of the convergence where you got arrested for the first time, right?
Oh, wow.
Mm. Yeah.
And this is when people locked down in San Francisco.
Yep.
That was like a few.
2019.
Like a mile from here.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, Kathy. Nostalgia. I remember. I was like, oh, that's awesome. We didn't know each other that well.
Jordan?
I felt like the video almost had like okay, you know how like the Army does their recruiting videos now?
Did you just, Jordan, did you just compare us? Let me just be clear. Jordan just compared us to the U.S. military.
I'm sorry. Like, it's not like I'm comparing it.
Maybe they're video.
Just in terms of the emotional. Okay.
I see it. I see it.
Not how they make it, like, look exciting.
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah. Yes, you're right.
All right, good. Okay. Good. Fair enough.
I hate the fucking military and everything.
Well, you know, their videos are like sometimes.
Their videos are good sometimes.
I mean, yeah. I don't want to be part of the military, but I was like, damn, like, they make you feel like you're about to do something really purposeful. So I can see.
You know what's
it.
Interesting about the military videos, too? They never involve violence.
Yeah, I know.
Even though
that.
The military is an institution of organized violence. That's what it's for.
Yeah, it's true.
Which tells, I mean, it actually relates to the blog post I made today, which people can read if you want to, about how evil can be transformed into something that's necessary or good. But anyways, any other thoughts? Any questions about what we mean by participatory content? Anybody on Zoom have questions? Anna, can you look at the chat to see if anyone has questions? Does anyone else have questions or comments? I really encourage everyone to read Damon Sintola's book, by the way. Maybe I shouldn't admit this on...
Is this the first time you reference this? I don't think I've heard it.
So the only comment thing says insects are definitely sentient beings.
Insects are sentient beings. So I'm probably like 5% less confident than with vertebrates, but I'm still pretty confident. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. Or maybe it is here and there, but... In the air. But maybe it's here and there after the end of this conversation. Any other questions or thoughts on what we mean by participatory content? All right, well, I'll just end by saying we're hoping with the podcast, the blog, video production, we continue to go down this path. Because one big obstacle I found in creating a more participatory network that reached the critical threshold we needed to really change the world is that a network focused pretty exclusively on direct action is going to be almost by definition exclusive.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about risky direct action. There are a lot of people who are, you know, maybe physically unable to take those sorts of risks, legally unable because maybe their legal status doesn't allow them to take the sorts of risks that maybe I'm able to take. And some people just dispositionally, you know, are not sort of quote unquote activist types. And I think good movements and even more so good communities create space for everybody. And I think one of the things we're trying to do is create networks like this fishnet on the right. And we'll just call it a fishnet for saving fish. We go to fish farms and we save fish.
Yes. Yes.
Not to capture and kill fish. We're going to fish farms and taking them out and bringing them out in the wild or to a fish sanctuary. And there are fish sanctuaries for fish from fish farms. But
Candy Whip,
One of the things about this fishing on the right is we needed to include everybody, not just the 1% of people are vegan. And frankly, even even the 1% of people are vegan, we're not even reaching all of them, because if you're exclusively focused on action and direct action, it's going to be really hard to reach even the 1% of people are vegan, because the reality is most vegans are a little intimidated by activism. They don't see themselves as activists, even if they're vegan. And when you start thinking about the other 99% of people, we've got to find ways to show them that they too can participate in this. And honestly, the trial that just unfolded in Utah is a great example of this, because to me, those 8 people on that jury are activists. They're agents for change. They did something that was bold, that was the decision of conscience, that is going to leave an impact on the world, on animals. And they were just randomly drawn. It's not like these people were people who thought of themselves as activists, thought of themselves as particularly brave. They were just called by their sense of duty to American democracy to adjudicate this case, and they sided with the animals and the animal rights movement.
Wow.
And that means anybody can be in that same place. And we've got to find ways to reach people exactly like those 8 members of the jury. And that's kind of what we're trying to do.
So
any final thoughts?
I'm really curious how we do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of what we're trying to do together and figure it out. But like, to me, one of the things we do is, and I've said this to you before, is we have to create participatory content, but it also has to be great. You know, one of the things about this video is that it's well edited. I mean, I spent probably at least 50 hours, maybe 100 hours editing one video, and it got 170,000 views, which is not bad. But
I think the Wonder Woman music really made it too. Did anyone recognize where that music was from?
It's New Order, yeah. Wonder Woman picked it up, and it's not Wonder Woman. It's Wonder Woman 1984.
It's the Blue Monday remix.
It's a Blue Monday remix. How do you remember that?
Because I listen to that song like every week.
Really? Still do?
I love this video.
It's a great song. Yeah, I look love it up. That Blue song. Monday remix, New Order. It's a great, great song. But yeah, I mean, one of the things I think the problem is, when you have stuff like Netflix and TikTok out there that is drawing people's attention in this really addictive dopamine, you know, driven way, where these social media companies are literally designing products they know that you cannot stop watching. Ugh. It is much an addiction as a cigarette, in my view. And everyone should watch the documentary, The Social Dilemma, if you don't believe me, because there's a lot of neural engineering that's happening to especially young people today. And one of the ways we fight that is by having content that is just as compelling, but actually has some purpose. It's not just about getting you to click and watch another stupid video of someone peeing on themselves. Or I don't. What are people watching nowadays?
Is that what you're watching? What are your algorithms pushing you, man?
I don't even watch any. What is big on TikTok right now?
Really?
It's got to be something.
Really, like mundane stuff. Like right now, there's a sound going around. Sadly, it's about this woman who's like loving this chicken salad, and it's so sad.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right, so here's an example that I do know about: video games. Like, video games are an example of a technology, and I love video games, and I think there are a lot of really good people in the video gaming industry. So sorry, Kristen. Kristen's not here right now. Kristen's planning to make a vegan video game, which I love you for that. But and Matthew and I have talked about this a little bit. Like, there is a lot of joy and there's a lot of engagement from a video game, but this is a technology devised to capture your attention in an extremely addictive way. And the more addictive it is, the more effective it is at generating profit for the company, right? And they don't care if it actually has some purpose. They don't care if it makes your life more meaningful, if it makes the world a better place. They just care if they've captured your attention. In the same way, a cigarette company only cares if you smoke more cigarettes, right? And so we've got to find ways to create content that is meaningful, that has purpose, that gets people out into the real world. So one of the goals of all the content we create is we want our content not to cause people to stay at home in front of their laptops and their Netflix and their phones, but to feel compelled to come out to do something, right? And connect with other people. So that's, Allie.
I'm wondering also if part of what stops people from participating is also because there's so much stress like involved with like this feeling like if I'm not making enough money, if I'm not doing all this for my family, and that everything can be taken away, and most people are living paycheck to paycheck, and then when they get off work or they're done doing everything they need to do, they just want to like disconnect almost. It's like they're trying to just not think. And I wonder if sometimes thinking about like going out to an action sounds like something else they're going to have to decompress.
Stress.
They already are kind of living like in this really anxious type of state. I don't know if it's a matter of like getting universal basic income. So people won't have to be like working. working jobs that stress them out. But
yeah,
I've thought about that too. Like, and then maybe also just allowing or trying to come up with other options for people to participate in a way that they realize is going to make them feel good and feel like re-energized at the time they do have.
Yeah.
Not like, oh, it's either 100% or nothing at all, or do something really like stressful or not at all, but just coming, you know, to something wherever they're at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to repeat the question so it's on the mic. But Ali asked, I think, a really good question. And that is, whether in a world where people are already so stressed, and I think it's 40% of Americans can't pay an unexpected $500 bill, 2/3 of Americans are lonely. There's just an op-ed piece in the New York Times by David Brooks. I think it's called The Saddest Generation. And he's talking about not just the United States, but the world. And apparently, when you ask people how happy they are on a 0 to 10 scale, there's been like a 400% increase in the number of people who say 0. I think it's like roughly 7% of people are saying like, I'm basically as miserable as you can possibly imagine. Like, this is the worst I've possibly been. And this is not just in the United States, this is in India and China. So is that an obstacle? Can we actually get people to come out to do anything? And even for themselves, frankly, when they're feeling so broken and defeated. Yeah, you have an
answer? I just wanted to say, I have no evidence to back this up, although I'd love to look into it. I feel like the thing that really helps with this is communal living, because I feel like you genuinely want to be around the people if you have a good, you know, living situation. And it doesn't feel like such a burden when you have to like socialize with your roommates that you love because you share values and home. And in a way, you're also sharing a lot of resources. And I just feel like that's a lot of things that we did in that video. We did because we loved and trust each other, and we lived together.
Some of us did, for sure.
Some of us. I mean, sometimes it didn't work out for the best, but a lot of times it was great. And I feel like, I would love, have you read anything on that? I would love to like.
Yeah, there actually is pretty good research on intentional communities. And in sociology, there's this term prolixity. Has anyone heard this term before?
What?
Prolixity. It's like a fancy term for just how geographically close you are. It turns out the degree of your social connection and trust depends enormously in just how physically close you are to someone, you know? And this is true of like family relationships. This is true of friendships. You might even have experienced this yourself where you're really close to someone and then you move just like to the other side of the town. And it's like, wait, it's only like a 15-minute difference, but I actually know nothing about your life now. It's kind of astonishing. And when you're living like right next to each other, which is the way human beings live for basically 250,000 years. I mean, since we split off from Homo habilis and became a distinct species 250,000 years ago, we have lived with people who we are close to, right? And now it's almost the opposite, where my guess is most of us, including me, like, I don't know any of my neighbors. I should make an effort to get to know. That's not true. I know my next door neighbor, but I just know his name. I said hi to him like 5 times in the last 6 months, but otherwise I don't know him at all. And that's just fundamentally different than the way human beings have lived for almost all of our evolutionary history.
And
it's a little weird.
Very relieved by the growth of urbanism, which allowed them to be anonymous. And many people love that about
They
cities.
Do.
It's kind of depressing.
Yeah, it is depressing. So I think, and I think there are introverted people who it's taxing on you to go out there and connect with people. So it's a complicated question. I don't know the answer, Ali.
Yeah.
What's your answer?
I don't know the answer either, but I think kind of I agree with what Priya was saying about having more intentional communities, pulling resources together more so people aren't needing to spend as much money and to work as much to get by. And I think that is definitely a big like deterrent on people being as active as they otherwise would want to be. And I think organizing the workplace, finding ways to tie in like different communities of people. So maybe there is a way for you to be doing your activism even through your job, even if it doesn't seem as such. But I think more unions like tend to help empower people more in their workplace. So I think it's an important element to it, even if it doesn't seem like it always directly relates to animal rights.
For sure. Intentional communities and unions. I think those are good answers. What's up, Jordan?
Yeah, so anyway, I have like, you know, a kind of response to potential communities. I'm going to say I do live alone. I actually live alone by choice, and I probably, even if I did have means, I would probably continue to live alone. But, like, sometimes, like, you know, I live in an SRO that's, like, funded by the city. I'm getting, like, 30% of my income, so it's a government subsidy. So that kind of, like, puts me in a unique position where it would probably be more expensive for me to live in a potential community. But, like, I feel like, you know, even if you do live alone, like, I've been, like, really trying to, despite being autistic, trying to come out into the world, even if it's, like, difficult, even if it's awkward, like, because I just recently had some changes in my life. Like, I got my surgery, pandemic's over, and I'm just, like, I'm glad to be around people, well, most of the people in here I'm very comfortable with, so, yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing, Jordan. All right, any final thoughts? Otherwise, we'll shut things down and just go eat and dance for those who are joining the
dance
party.
It's called Vibe, just Vibe.
Vibe.
Yeah,
it's a Vibe.
Right, Anna?
It's a Vibe.
Yeah.
So to Allie's question, to this point of like feeling exhausted and kind of coming home from work and thinking, here's another thing to stick my neck out of. I think there's a flip side to this coin of this highly connected network on the right. I think it's good for us to create these tight networks of advocacy where we reinforce each other's support for the movement. But I think part of the reality is people live in these networks, but often for things that keep us from supporting animal rights and veganism. I think a lot of when people say, I'm thinking about veganism and the difficulties I have of doing it, almost always they mention the social difficulty of doing so. I have family, I have friends. I'm Filipino, I recently went back to my home country of the Philippines, and I've taken this thing called the Liberation Pledge, which is basically where I publicly live vegan and I avoid sitting down at tables where people are eating the bodies of animals. And I was going back for my grandfather's birthday, his, I believe, 89th birthday.
Wow.
And I had this challenge of I have had family here that I haven't seen in maybe a decade. And I'm thinking, how do I uphold my own personal moral commitments and also just kind of maintain my own sanity? Because for me, it sucks to be around, like, the full bodies of animals. And part of the difficulty of these tight social networks is finding ways to maintain our own commitments when they go against what is happening around us. So personally, I think that part of the answer for creating more empowered people and a broader movement is finding ways to bring people in to and harness and solidify their support, but in a way that doesn't make them feel like they're going against everybody around them and going against their social networks.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, one of the nice thing about this lattice structure is you can almost even physically imagine trying to carry something with these two nets, right? The one on the right is a lot stronger. The one on the left is going to fall apart really quickly because each of the nodes isn't really supported by anything else. It's just going to drop, right? Well, on the right, because every node, like, you're only as strong as your weakest point in the net. The net's going to break and everything's going to get loose if there are weak points. And in kind of the fish net, remember, fish net to save fish, not to kill fish, but in the fish net model, every node, every point in the net is supported by a bunch of other nodes. So it can carry weight in a way that the nodes on the left are going to fall apart. And for those of you listening on the podcast, again, just look at the image. You'll see for yourself what I mean. Does that make sense to everyone? Like, you wouldn't want to carry something with that. This, on the other hand, would be easy. It's like, oh, this is exactly what we need to carry something. Yeah. And that's kind of what you need to do as a movement. You need to carry things. You need to be able to do work. So let's go do the work by connecting with each other.
By eating Beyond Burgers.
By eating Beyond Burgers. It's true. Eating Beyond Burgers. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Hope you all enjoyed that conversation. It's an experiment, something a little bit new. And I'd be really interested to hear what your thoughts on in this shorter and more spontaneous format. So again, these are going to come out on Mondays. I think the longer form traditional podcast is going to come out on Thursday. We're going to aim for 12 p.m. Pacific time for both of these. But if you have any other thoughts on the structure, the content, even the people participating in the conversation, don't hesitate to let me know. You can shoot me an email at wayne@compassionatebay.org. You can also sign up to my Substack and just reply to one of the emails I sent out on the newsletter. And the Substack is simpleheart.substack.com. But thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.